Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Bill Barnwell Show. I am Bill Barnwell. Today we're going to be joined by Underdog Football's Josh Norris, talk about all things best ball, a podcast I've been meaning to get to for a while, talking about a new emerging kind of fantasy football, hitting the most fun parts to me about fantasy football. We're going to talk about what best ball is, how it works, and talk about some of the players who we are excited about and maybe worried about at their current ADP heading into the traditional and best ball fantasy football seasons. But before we get into today's episode, I want to quickly tell you about another ESPN podcast. One I tell you about every week recently. It's The Right Time with Bomani Jones. Of course, you know Bomani is out there delivering the takes, delivering the insightful analysis, and he has great guests three times a week, including our friend, someone who was hyped up as, I think, like the most exciting talent at ESPN, I believe, this week in Dominique Foxworth. I don't want to hype up Dominique any more than he's currently being hyped, but Dominique and Bomani are an excellent combination on Fridays. So make sure you're downloading and following The Right Time with Bomani Jones wherever you get your podcasts. And also, The Ultimate Fighter is back, the reality show that brings top MMA prospects together under one roof to compete for a UFC contract, is on ESPN+. Featherweight champ Alexander Volkanovski and Brian Ortega coach men's bantamweights and middleweights who have put their lives on hold for the chance to pursue their UFC dreams. Stream episodes every Tuesday only on ESPN+. So sign up now at ESPNplus.com/UFC. Without further ado, here's Josh Norris talking about best ball. All right, joining me now, here as promised, on the Bill Barnwell Show, a show I'm very excited to do. I have been grinding a fair amount of best ball during the quiet times of the NFL offseason, and I'm very happy to have this guest on to sort of give everyone maybe a best ball primer if you haven't played it before, but someone who is very experienced and knowledgeable about this topic, a man who creates content for the Underdog platform, which is, of course, one of the places you can play best ball fantasy football, and the host of the Underdog Football Show, and probably the nicest Aston Villa fan I know, to my knowledge. It is Josh Norris. Josh, how are you?
It's me, Tom Hanks, and Prince William are like the three most well-known Aston Villa fans. I don't know in what order you want to rank us. Bill, thrilled to be here. Long-time listener, long-time consumer, first-time caller. So glad you've been basking in the sun of that hot, hot best ball summer. And I'm so glad that we get to share this with everyone else today.
Yeah, I'm excited. I really have been. Like, last year I dipped my toes in. I played a little bit here and there. This year I feel like I have really been diving in. Trying to figure out how I was going to extend that metaphor. It turns out it was really simple. Diving in was a really obvious one, but it didn't come to my mind, which is why I'm not as good of a host as you are, Josh. I'm really excited to talk about this because I think it's a really interesting way to approach fantasy football, interesting way to sort of think about the season. I think if you're someone who is inclined to play fantasy football, this is a really cool way to approach it differently. I think it hits some of the best parts of fantasy football and leaves out some of the parts I don't enjoy as much. And I think if you're not a fantasy football fan, I think this is a really sort of great bird's eye view way to think about the season, think about the league as a whole, where teams have depth, where the league's going to change in the months to come, and a way to sort of, have a way to back your opinions. I mean, I'm someone who has a lot of opinions before the season. Some of them turn out to be great. Some of them not so much, but I think it's a good place to sort of, put your money or your play money, if you want, where your mouth is when it comes to sort of figuring out how you see the NFL season going. So Josh, let's start with just the simplest part. Let's start with the broadest view here. Explain the basics of best ball, regardless of where it's played, whether it's Underdog, DraftKings, all the other different places around the internet where you can play it.
To your point, it's draft only. And yes, I think a lot of people, when they think of fantasy football, if it's their office league, playing with their college buddies, whoever, you put the most work and maybe the most exciting element of fantasy football is in your draft. And the name best ball just comes from the style of golf match where, you take your group or your pairings best shot and you go from there. Well, best ball is just taking your best lineups, your best players each and every week. There are no waivers. There are no trades. You don't have to worry about, do I start this player versus this player based on the matchup. At the end of the week, best ball takes your optimal lineup and sets it. And so it's just the draft. And then you find out each week, obviously, who has the most points in the season, whoever has the most points based on that lineup each week, the best one, then they win the league. Is that simple? I mean, Bill, I'm so close to the sun with best ball that sometimes I forget that people don't know about it. I'm so glad that we're here to teach the people about it. Did I forget anything there?
No, I feel like you hit the basics. Like, your lineup is automatically set for you each week. So whoever produces the best performances, those are the people who end up in your lineup. You don't have to worry about, you know, setting your lineup each week, accounting for guys who are injured, signing guys off the waiver wire. Once you draft your team,
right?
It does feel weird if you're a traditional fantasy football player. Once you draft your team, you are done. You can watch it every week. I know there were times where I would watch my teams every week. I'm not going to lie. Well, you know, the teams that were Dak Prescott based, I kind of just checked out after, you know, week five or so. I just sort of, you know, I looked from afar, and if something worked out, great, but I wasn't checking those teams maybe quite as intensely. But I think you get, you know, like you said, the most exciting part of fantasy football, which is the draft. And I think in some cases, if you're a hardcore football fan, which I feel like a lot of people listening to the show are, I don't think there's many super casual football fans who listen to an hour football podcast every week, but I think that might give you the best opportunity, because I think when it comes to traditional fantasy football, you might have your season come down to a waiver wire pickup in week four or week five that, you know, you're not going to have the opportunity to maybe get for different reasons. So you may, maybe you invested in a useful player, but not that star player, with your free agent money 2 weeks earlier. But in terms of, you know, being able to press what you think might be an edge or what you think might be an opportunity, I mean, you're getting more drafts to work with. And so I think for me, that's what stands out to me, is basically, I if I think I'm smarter than your average football fan, which maybe I am, maybe I'm not, I get more opportunities to try and leverage that. And I think, you know, that's what's meant to be. But for you, I mean, is there a reason why best ball stands out to you as a more interesting proposition, or is it just that it's just one of the many ways you can try and play fantasy football to you?
Well, I think there are a lot of uses for it. And I think we all have that one league that we might put the most effort in that's a season long.
Yes.
And I think that best ball is the best preparation for that league, because it prepares you for drafts. I mean, obviously there are massive tournaments at every platform. We have one that's over $1 million over on Underdog for a $25 entry. So you can do that if you want to, or you can just do like a $3 draft or a $5 draft or a $10 draft. And it's not just like you're saying, you create one team that you track all year long. It's kind of like football Pringles. Once you pop, you can't stop it, because it's just so much fun. Because you can draft on the app, you can draft on a desktop. And again, once you do one and you like take the 102, then you think in your head, well, what if I get the 110 in my home league and I want to figure out what I do at the end of the draft or near the turn? You can easily do that. And it's the best way to test out strategies to be different roster constructions. And there's been a lot written up recently on like the optimal way to construct a roster in best ball formats, how many you place in each position, because the starting lineup, at least on Underdog, is one quarterback, two running backs, three wide receivers, one tight end, one flex, and then 10 bench spots. So there's no defense. There's no kickers. The things that give you headaches each and every week that you lost by 3 points because, I don't know, Justin Tucker nailed a 60-yarder to close out the game on Monday Night Football, right? We don't have any of those headaches on Underdog. So it's one where, you know, do you load up on running backs early? Do you take one and then load up on wide receivers? How early do you want to take a Patrick Mahomes or a Josh Allen? Or do you want to wait and take two or three quarterbacks in the middle to late rounds? There are so many ways to attack drafts right now that we all have the same information at this point. And then you can draft later on this summer as well, when we have new information as well. What I'm saying, Bill, is we can basically draft now in middle of June, or we can draft in late August. And we're going to come out with different rosters. And that's the fun of it. That's absolutely the fun of it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, last year when I did probably a couple of drafts right around this time, and Antonio Gibson was going in the middle rounds, and that was great. That was exciting. And the teams I had that were successful did have Antonio Gibson typically on them. And of course, as the summer went on, we got more information. Antonio Gibson, you know, started rising up draft boards and became a more viable pick. And I think maybe, you know, people who were playing best ball leagues earlier in the summer as they approach their home leagues, as they approach more traditional leagues, had that information about Antonio Gibson. We're already thinking about where he might go. And maybe they took him around earlier than he would have gone in a best ball draft in June, but got him maybe, you know, got him before the people in their league were even really aware of him, maybe heading into their draft, depending on, of course, on how complex and how intense your league is. In terms of, like you mentioned, the idea of building different draft constructions and sort of having this idea of, you know, how you're going to approach a number of drafts as opposed to just maybe one or two drafts for a more traditional player. How do you sort of manage the idea of having a portfolio of players? Like, you know, if you have someone you love, and we're going to get to that maybe a little later on in terms of players we love, how do you resist the urge not to take that player every draft? And like, what are your thresholds there for in terms of how you're building, you know, this bigger thought of I'm going to have exposure to some of these players, but maybe not, you know, 100% exposure.
It's difficult. I think that's the most difficult part, is because we all have biases when we enter these drafts. You know, watch these players during the season. We all have an opinion of them. And it's not just at the player level, but it's also the team level. And I would say maybe during these, I don't know, 6 weeks before training camp starts and then preseason action, it's almost certainly also where we just convince ourselves what we are saying is absolute fact. And then at least for us who get on a microphone a couple times per week, we kind of repeat those same things over and over and over again. Like, I've been trying to think of this. 365 days ago, there were so many questions about how the meshing of Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs would be, where, you know, Stephon Diggs was falling down in best ball boards and even obviously in season long drafts just because of that concern. The same thing was with Keenan Allen and Tyrod Taylor. And there was no even thought that Justin Herbert could come in and look like the best young quarterback in the NFL. So I'm trying to question like what we consider now to be fact, like trying to make a case for players no one wants to make the case for. I think that's a really interesting show to do at some point. Maybe I just thought of that and we'll do that later on. But then there's also the part of, you know, there are players in the same team and even in like the same position that are going back to back, like Raheem Mostert and Trey Sermon are going back to back in ADP right now. And in best ball, you don't want to take both of them. Like, you don't necessarily want like the entire exposure to the 49ers backfield. You kind of have to choose your horse in that race. So like, I might lean Raheem Mostert 80% of the time, but Trey Sermon, then Raheem Mostert, I kind of want 20% of the time. And then like, you also have T Higgins and Tyler Boyd going very similarly in drafts. And they probably play like a very different role and area of the field for the Cincinnati Bengals. So I'll always lean one side. It's never going to be a clean 50-50. And I'm sure you think the exact same way as I do, because again, we bring bias to the table either consciously or subconsciously, but it's something I'm trying to do and trying to think of more and more. And luckily we can do it as often as we want, because we can draft whenever we want to.
Can I tell you about one of my biggest biases from last year?
Yes.
It was thinking that Josh Allen was not going to be very good.
Right.
And, that was a not a positive EV bias for me when it came to best ball. But I did learn an important lesson, which is I think even if, you know, even if I think that Josh Allen is not going to have the season he did, which, you know, full credit to Josh Allen, I was totally wrong. You know, there is a place for him somewhere on your roster. You know, even if you think a guy is going to get injured, even if you think a guy is overvalued, there is a, at least some sort of percentage basis, whether he's on 2% or 3% or 5% of your rosters, where if there's value at ADP, if you have the opportunity to take a guy in a spot that you think makes sense, if you can stack him with another player, like a quarterback wide receiver combo, like an Allen and Diggs, you know, you're going to be wrong a certain percentage of the time. And if you're wrong, you know, you're still going to be I don't want to say you, Josh, but I'm going to say myself, I have been wrong before. And I think that, you know, you have that opportunity where, again, where if you are drafting in one or two leagues, typically your traditional leagues, like, you're not going to take Josh Allen if you don't think he's going to be a stud. And I know the fantasy Josh Allen is different from the real Josh Allen. So there's a little difference there, but I do think that, you know, Stephon Diggs might be an even better example. If you thought Stephon Diggs was going to lose some efficiency moving to the Bills, well, you didn't take him last year in those two drafts. But if you're drafting 20 or 30 best ball teams, you're going to take him one or two times probably. And those one or two times, you're going to be pleasantly surprised to be wrong. In terms of the sort of players we're thinking about here when it comes to best ball, obviously, you know, the value for each player when it comes to fantasy football depends on the league rules. Whether there's super flex, whether there's PPR, whether it's half PPR, the different rules in the different settings. But on the whole, are there players who are better in best ball than they would be in a traditional fantasy football league, whether it's an archetype or even a specific player?
Yes, there are. And it's kind of a phrase that has turned into a cliche that, oh, he's better in best ball at the moment. But I think that there's some truth to it. And typically that slogan is attached to players that you see on an island game on Sunday Night Football or Monday Night Football, score a 50-yard touchdown, you know, and that's immediately 11 and a half points in your pocket. Let's say like a Marquez Valdes-Scantling or a DeSean Jackson in his past. And, you know, Will Fuller has always been viewed as that. There is some truth to that because, and Hayden Winks, my co-host for the Underdog Football Show, wrote a post about this on, you know, kind of quantifying better in best ball. And when you look at it, MVS and let's say Hunter Renfrow scored basically the same amount of points last season. But since, again, when we talk about roster construction, at least an underdog, it's three wide receivers and just one flex spot of those pass catchers. And maybe you draft 8, 9, 10 on your best ball roster. You need them to be among the top four scorers. So a Hunter Renfrow, I don't know, 6-point productive game. You don't want that to be the week that he is going to be in your lineup, because that means really the rest of your pass catchers failed. Instead, you would like it to be the Marquez Valdes-Scantling who randomly goes off for a 21-point performance, or 5, 17, 14, 19, 13 performances, you know? So the spiked weeks are absolutely true. Now, Bill, I do think that there is a bit of a fallacy, if I'm using that term correctly, in terms of chasing the only high upside players,
right?
Because then it knocks down the likes of, I don't know, let's say Cole Beasley. Cole Beasley right now, an underdog, is going as the wide receiver 53, which is absolutely nuts, to be honest with you, because that is not factoring in his 2021 production at all. We have him as the wide receiver 54. Like, if you look at his first few weeks of last season, he caught 4 passes for 58 yards, 5 passes for 70 yards, 6 for 100, 3 for 32 in a score, 4 for 45 in a score, 11 for 112. But people just view him as like the slot receiver with like a low ceiling. But Bill, what I was just saying of like one catch for 50 yards and a touchdown, that's great. What if a guy also puts up, you know, 5 for 62 in a score, and he does that a handful of times per week? So that type of spiked week package can come from a whole bunch of different shapes and sizes. That's what I'm trying to say here.
Can I tell you how angry I am at you right now?
Why?
Literally, before you even mentioned him, I loaded up Cole Beasley's Pro Football Reference page for the 2020 season.
Bill, I was typing the exact same thing.
There we go. I was going to use him as the example of like a player who in week-to-week fantasy can be really frustrating because you know he's valuable. Right. But there were so many weeks where I'd be like, do I want to put him in this lineup? And like, I think, you know, he is a really valuable player in the right spot. And I think the cool thing about best ball is that, you know, whether it is Cole Beasley who has that, you know, solid week to week maybe, but also then has those spike weeks, or an MVS, you know, you don't have to drive yourself crazy making those decisions. I feel like for me, I have the least insight into should I start this marginal player, or, you know, start this, you know, borderline starter wide receiver versus this other borderline starter wide receiver. I think that's going to come down to more luck than anything else on a week to week basis. And so you can throw that out the window at best ball. Like, it's going to pick it for you automatically. You're going to make those decisions really on draft day, as opposed to having to worry about them during the season itself. And I think that's really good.
Bill, this is an enlightening conversation, because it's also now making me realize that best ball removes our bias when it comes to week lineup construction. Because let's say, I don't know, week two last season, you were in dire straits at wide receiver in your season long league, and you picked up Nelson Agholor, for example. He averaged 10.4 half PPR points last season. That was ahead of guys that you drafted way earlier, like DJ Chark, like Debo Samuel, like Michael Gallup, like Michael Thomas. But how often do you find yourselves, unless you can like completely remove yourself from the feelings and pre-existing thoughts that you have, you're like, oh yeah, Nelson Agholor, easily. I'm going to start him each and every week. But guess what? Best ball does that for you. And again, it's crazy though, Bill. I say that, And then I think Nelson Agholor is like one of the more undervalued players in drafts going right now. I mean, you're getting his team's number one wide receiver at wide receiver 60 overall ADP. And this is someone who obviously the Patriots completely invested in. They're going to run ton of 12 personnel, but they're going to have two wide receivers on the field. And guess who's going to be locked in to one of those at all times? I think it's going to be Nelson Agholor. So getting that so late in drafts right now just makes a ton of sense.
And this is a perfect example of bias because I hate the Nelson Agholor contract. I think it was a bad overpay. And I know that if he has a good season, my mentions are going to be terrible. So even subconsciously, I'm like, do I want to pick this guy and have to deal with, you know, social media? So nothing against him as a player. I think he's fine. But yeah, I mean, you make total sense. And I think, you know, like you said, you know, you have the opportunity to act on that. You know, you might have a league if you're going to play two or three fantasy leagues where Nelson Agholor might only get to you once, or you might have to take him for some reason. But with best ball, you kind of have that ability to have 30 drafts where you can take him at a higher rate than the competition. And if
why stop at 30?
Intuition's right. Why stop at 30 is a very, very fair point. Is there a max for the underdog $1 million competition?
Yes, I believe it's 150. So there's actually like this dumbbell or barbell approach that people are taking now where they do like 75 early on. You're talking about edges earlier. Antonio Gibson last year is a great example. I throw in Chase Claypool. Heck, I throw in James Robinson. You know, even this year, like when we launched Best Ball Mania 2, right the first week of May, Trey Lance, Justin Fields were going as like quarterback 26, quarterback 28. They have been on an absolute rocket ship all the way up to quarterback 15 for Trey Lance and quarterback 17 for Justin Fields right now. So like if you drafted early then you got them at a reduced price. But Bill, as soon as we find out if it's during the preseason or if it's right before the regular season that Trey Lance and Justin Fields are both starting, combined with, you know, their Konami code, their rushing upside, which is just a nice floor for quarterbacks that we know of. Both of those names could find themselves in redraft in your season long leagues up into like the quarterback 10 area, despite like it being a loaded position, despite those guys already having a ton of seasons on their resume already in the top 10. I wouldn't be surprised if we do find ourselves with drafting Trey Lance and Justin Fields in that area once they are named starters.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Now I will say Matt Nagy told Chris Collinsworth today that there's no possible scenario that Justin Fields is the starting quarterback.
Wait, week really? One.
That's what he said. He said, Andy Dalton is our starter. Justin is our number two, and we're going to stick with this plan. You just got to trust the plan.
See, now, Bill, this is, I've been talking with this with Hayden a lot on our show, that just because so many of us on the outside like the process and the pick and the decision that Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace made, that doesn't mean we can trust them to make another good decision the next time. You know, like just because they made one good move doesn't mean they make another good move. And it just seems like they are all in on this Alex Smith to Patrick Mahomes, handing the torch, handing the baton. I just think the two scenarios of those two teams are so different with where we're at right now.
I mean, I will say that I am skeptical, but this is your chance, right? Like if you are someone who thinks Justin Fields is going to be a starter by week three, man, like getting these quotes right now, or you have people skeptical, that is great. You can really back that opinion with, you know, your picks and back it with multiple drafts and get, like you said, you know, if you do a bunch of drafts right now, as opposed to later in the year, you can get Justin Fields higher than, or get it later than you would get him, you know, in August and September, where you start hearing all those quotes about, man, he's so great in camp. And, you know, Matt Nagy starts wavering in his chatter. You know, you start hearing the leaks out of camp that Justin Fields might come in. You know, I feel like you have the opportunity to act on that. And I think that's the really cool part about best ball is that, you know, you have more opportunities to sort of, how would I put it? You have more opportunities to take your opinion and back it up. And
yes,
I think there's, you know, whether it is on Underdog, whether it's on DraftKings, whether it's on Yahoo, I mean, there's a lot of places you can play it now, but a lot of opportunities. And I feel like we've sort of hinted at it a little bit throughout the show. You mentioned Nelson Agholor. So let's just get to it. I feel like this is something.
Let's move some ADPs.
Let's move some ADPs. I don't think I can. I don't think I have that ability.
Come on.
I would say that you do. Maybe Hayden does, but I have picked out a few players who I think are better than their current underdog ADP. And I think this would apply across the board, whenever what draft you're doing.
They're very similar right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And I think whether it's going to be for best ball or for a traditional league, I mean, you're going to see ADP is kind of in the same range right now, and things will change maybe as we get closer to draft day or closer to the start of the season. But let's start on the positive side. Let's start with a few players who you think, Josh, are better than their ADP at the moment. You mentioned Nelson Agholor. Who else comes to mind for you?
I'll start at the top of the draft and kind of move down the draft board, but I'll just do one name so we can kind of go back and forth here. Like, look, five spots at one position might not seem as a lot, but Joe Mixon right now is going as running back 12, and we have him in our rankings as running back 7. Last year, he was running back 9 in fantasy points per game. We all know he only played 6 games.
Yes.
Some by his choice. But I think, you know, when we consider why we differ from the public, which is ADP, I think a lot of it can be attributed to, you know, how much of the narrative do we want to buy? What case do we want to make for this part of the calendar year? And I would say, just point blank, the Bengals offense is going to be better this year. And even how good it was last year with Joe Burrow in terms of putting up fantasy points, it's going to be better off this season. And I think even for Joe Mixon, it's a massive change to not have Giovanni Bernard in that backfield, because we talk about targets all the time in relation to running backs. I mean, Gio had 59 targets last season. Joe Mixon averaged just over 4 per game. In 8 seasons, Gio only had 2 years with less than 50 targets, and all 8 seasons had at least 40 targets. And in 4 seasons in the NFL, 3 of Joe Mixon's seasons have come in with less than 50 targets. And so when you look at the rest of that backfield, it's what, like Travion Williams, it's Samaje Perine, it's some random rookies and like Chris Evans that they brought in.
Yes.
They have hinted at it by their actions, by their words, that Joe Mixon is going to be a true feature back to them. And so getting that receiving work on top of being, I think, Bill, from an eye test perspective, one of the best runners in the NFL, that they've invested in offensive line as well. And you throw in that their offensive line coach last year, I think, is now on the Texas State coaching staff. And they brought back the one that was associated to Joe Mixon's best season ever in the NFL. To me, grabbing him at running back 12, where he's going right now, but all the way up to running back 7, makes a ton of sense.
I mean, I don't want to disparage your eyes, Josh. But I will point, I'm not disagreeing here. I will point out that if you want to trust someone who has maybe a slightly more lengthy pedigree, nobody short of Bill Belichick has said that Joe Mixon is the best back in football. So I absolutely buy what you're saying here. I think it makes total sense. You know, I really think that it's important when you see players getting hyped to see what else is happening. When it comes to what the team is actually deciding, like, you know, maybe Shady McCoy a couple of years ago with the Bills, where it was all through camp, oh, he's going to be our guy. He's going to be our guy. He's great. But like, the Bills were adding players. They had no reason to pick up the unguaranteed money on Shady's deal. Of course, it gets to the end of the camp, Shady gets cut. With Mixon, there's none of that. Mixon has a clear path. He has been invested in heavily. The Bengals don't get anything out of not using him. It's not like they have to save him for a couple of years. Like, he's already getting paid. Like there, everything points to a big workload if he's available. Now, of course, he might get hurt. That's not out of the question. But again, just because he got hurt last year doesn't mean he's going to get hurt this year. And the opposite is true. Like, you know, just because a guy was healthy a year ago doesn't mean he's going to be healthy again in 2021. So I absolutely agree with you. And I have a player kind of in this same space.
Oh, give it to
me. I feel like I'm higher on maybe than people. And it's a guy who was the benefit of, or maybe to, I guess, to fantasy players' detriment, was irrationally hyped last year, and that was Clyde Edwards-Helaire, where, you know, you look at what the situation was last year for the Kansas City Chiefs. That was a roster that, even before the injuries happened on the offensive line, there were more questions about the offensive line last year than there are this year, where you have major upgrades throughout multiple spots on the line, especially on the interior. We saw last year that teams were willing to basically at times give up against the pack, go up against the run. Just say, okay, we're going to play two super deep safeties. We are going to let Clyde eat. We're going to let the mentor, Daryl Williams, eat. We're going to let whoever else is in this roster, whoever else is going to get handed the ball is going to eat. And, you know, it was a rookie year for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You know, of course, COVID did impact things. It wasn't like he was impacted personally, I think, but, you know, that it did change the way that, you know, rookies played. Some, of course, played better than others, but we know this is a team that has invested heavily in Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Giving up a first or using a first round pick, even though it's a late first round pick, is a pretty significant investment. I don't believe Andy Reid has ever used a first round pick on a running back before this point. I'm trying to think back to his time with the Eagles. And I don't think Brian Westbrook was a first round pick, or Shady wasn't a first round pick. I think Shady was a two. I mean, it's a big investment. And there's not much behind him here on the depth chart. Daryl Williams, you know, a guy who the Chiefs have not used as a featured back. Darwin Thompson, I know he was getting a ton of hype this time last year, but again, didn't look at the Chiefs really valued him all that much. Jerick McKinnon, a guy who has not really been able to stay healthy for any length of time. I mean, I think all the arguments you would have made in favor of Clyde Edwards-Helaire last year when he was going pretty reliably in the first round, I think they're even stronger this year. And again, last year was a season where the stars for the Chiefs were healthy and super productive with Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. And, you know, will they be healthy again? Probably, but are they going to play 17 games? Who knows? So to me, I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire, someone who's going, you know, typically in the middle, late second round from what I've seen, I feel like that is an opportunity for a guy to maybe get first round value for a running back where you don't have to take a running back in the first round. If you want to go with a wide receiver or one of the tight ends in the first round, you might be able to get Edwards-Helaire, you know, in the second round and then get that value that you wouldn't have otherwise.
I absolutely love this one. And I'm sure some of your listeners were shouting at us when we were mentioning the likes of Chase Claypool, James Robinson, and Antonio Gibson, that CEH was kind of in that same grouping of someone that was being drafted much later. And then Damian Williams opts out. And then he starts going at like 107, 108 immediately. And he certainly didn't hit on, you know, that middle of the first round pedigree that we're talking about. But I feel like that's already being baked in here, Bill, because he's going as running back 15. He's kind of the cliff of the tier, because above him, it's Antonio Gibson now, it's Najee Harris, it's Joe Mixon, who I just mentioned at running back 12. And then after him, it's DeAndre Swift, which there seems to be massive questions about. Maybe I'll talk about him later. J.K. Dobbins and Chris Carson and Miles Sanders. So CEH is right there. And I even remember back to like week one, when we get that usage and he gets like six goal line carries and is unable to convert any of them. And some of that was on him. I would say a lot of it is on the offensive line. Yes. And obviously them coming short last season in the Super Bowl was much on the offensive line. And you bring in Orlando Brown, who is a true road grader who can, you know, create lanes, even if he's on the move for CEH, they might run some more power this year. Obviously Joe Tooney is one of my favorite players in the league, extremely athletic. And then they've added more and more pieces along that offensive line as well. And I quickly want to throw in his receiving game, because I think we forget what CEH was at LSU. I mean, with Joe Brady, he basically set SEC records in terms of receptions at the position. And last year he did okay. I think he had 36 receptions on 54 targets, but just 297 yards. I mean, Bill, it's absolutely feasible that CEH goes out there this year, catches 50 passes, 55 passes, maybe three or four touchdowns compared to just the one last year. That is an untapped area of his game that I think we see more of this year.
100%. And like you mentioned, six carries inside the 3 yard line in week one, just three rest of the season. I mean, like, I don't think they gave up on him after one game of not being able to score inside the 5 yard line. So I think there's really, you know, there's league winning upside here. Like maybe he gets hurt. Maybe he's not, you know, maybe they use him as a, you know, 60% snap guy and he's useful, but he's kind of in that range. Like I don't see DeAndre Swift, famous last words here. I don't see DeAndre Swift having like running back three upside. Whereas I feel like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you know, he might not get to that point, but you can at least pretty easily piece together a scenario where that happens.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Okay. I'm going to stick with the same position. All right. Damian Harris is going as running back 31. And this is really in relation to some of the other running backs that are going in this area around him. Like Miles Gaskin. Some people really like Miles Gaskin, but overall, I also want to factor in, like, not just in relation to other running backs, but also who at other positions are going in this same range. So Miles Gaskin is going as 55 overall ADP. So if I was doing the draft, I would not take Miles Gaskin there, because I could instead draft Lamar Jackson or Kyle Pitts in that same area. And then Chase Edmonds is another breakout running back that some people like, but rather than take Chase Edmonds, I would much rather go in and try to recapture the ceiling of Odell Beckham, who's back and healthy, and an offense that has a true identity. And so both of those players, I would pivot to other positions and then just wait 20 spots and select Damian Harris at running back 31. We had Phil Perry, who's a great beat for the New England Patriots on the Underdog Football Show. And he said basically that Damian Harris is getting the Sony Michel workload until he proves he can't get it out of performance or out of injury. And this is a team who, talk about changing their offensive style. I mean, they looked in the mirror and it was gross to watch last year. It was so difficult. It was manufactured touches everywhere. They've maybe a top five offensive line on paper. If not that, then top 10. They're going to create a bunch of mismatches with both their 12, with their 12 personnel, their two tight end sets. I wouldn't be surprised if they run some tempo to keep those mismatches on the field. And if there is one team that they might try to mirror the most this year in terms of their play action passing game and running the football, it might be the Cleveland Browns. And so rarely can you get someone who will have the workload until proven otherwise, at least on paper right now, than Damian Harris all the way down at running back 31.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, there's the possibility that Cam is not starting for most of the season. I think for Damian Harris, that suddenly opens up a lot of touchdown equity, because Cam scored 12 times last year. And I haven't checked where those runs came from, but I would bet that 10, 11 of those came in short yardage. So to me, suddenly that opened, 10 touchdowns. I actually looked it up, 10 touchdowns inside the 5 yard line for Cam last year. So suddenly that opens up all kinds of possibilities. Patriots, we know, you know, we've seen guys like the Garrett Blunt. We've seen not seasons from Sony Michel, but weeks from Sony Michel where they've been, you know, spike weeks from getting two or three carries inside the 5 yard line that turn into touchdowns. And I think Damian Harris can absolutely be that player. And I think that the Patriots are always going to have options. I think James White is going to have a role, but we know even if they have a receiving back taking significant snaps, that primary runner can be valuable. And, you know, Ramondre Stevenson could be that guy, I guess. Sony Michel could be that guy. But again, at that ADP, like you said, Damian Harris has such upside. And I think the opportunity cost of, or the opportunity benefit, I guess, of waiting on him and waiting on guys in this range maybe, and getting those wide receivers, getting those tight ends, getting those quarterbacks rushing upside in the earlier rounds is so valuable.
Yes, especially you're just talking about roster construction right now. You know, a lot of people are either taking two running backs early, one that they're really anchoring their roster to at the position, and then waiting quite a bit. Again, being able to take either your third running back or maybe even your second running back with Damian Harris and getting that workload when, again, he's going around a bunch of other names who don't have that same locked in workload, like, I don't know, Tony Pollard or Melvin Gordon or Ronald Jones or Leonard Fournette. Us getting Damian Harris in this area, I'm absolutely in love with it.
Yeah, for sure.
I
will go with a very different kind of player. A very different kind of player here. Way down the boards, wide receiver 68, I believe. On Underdog here, it's Tre'Quan Smith. And I think, again, this is what we're thinking about when it comes to how we think about offenses changing and the kind of bets you want to make on offenses changing over the course of a year. I mean, with the Saints, obviously, that offense is going to be different. Drew Brees is no longer there. And the quarterbacks they have to replace Drew Brees, neither of them look like Drew Brees. We have the Taysom Hill version of this offense where they are a run heavy, run first football team. That's fine. Like, you, but at least you can prepare for that. I understand. You can at least prepare for that universe. And if you want to draft Taysom Hill, you're going to have the opportunity to do that. If you want to say they're going to be a super run heavy football team with Alvin Kamara and Latavius Murray, you have the opportunity to do that. I'm at least willing to consider the universe where Jameis Winston is this team's starting quarter. I know. And we've seen Adam Trautman rise up fantasy boards so far this year, and it makes total sense. Michael Thomas, of course, a guy who was a first round pick last year, is going, you know, still pretty high. I think he's the wide receiver
nine
now. So, I mean, that's typically going to be, you know, end of second round, early third round for Michael Thomas. And that makes sense. A guy coming off of injury, but a guy we know can be a target monster. And then outside of Michael Thomas at wide receiver, I mean, it's Tre'Quan Smith, Marquez Callaway, Deontay Harris. I mean, there's not a ton here. And Tre'Quan Smith, you'd figure, is going to be well positioned to not only sort of get a bigger role in the offense if Jameis Winston is healthy, but also be more of a downfield receiver when Jameis Winston is in the lineup. Because Tre'Quan Smith over the last 3 years has been working with Drew Brees, and Drew Brees' arm has been slowly falling off. And by last year, it was pretty much off. And, you know, I feel like having Tre'Quan in that role where he's playing a significant percentage of snaps with an offense, with a quarterback we know can chuck it downfield and who is going most likely to chuck it downfield way more than Drew Brees did for the entirety of Tre'Quan Smith's career. I feel like that's an opportunity to, again, put your intuition, your ability to maybe read how things are going to change into practice. And it would not shock me at all if Tre'Quan Smith had a breakout season and had a lot of spike weeks, because he's playing in an offense with a quarterback who can generate those spike weeks for the first time.
Chaos is entertainment, Bill. Like, we want to be a member of Team Chaos.
Of course.
And in order for that to happen, Jameis Winston needs to be the starter of this team, because, I mean, the Drew Brees era was great. It was highly entertaining. It helped us a lot for fantasy football. It helped us a lot just to watch entertaining football. But I want to see Jameis as the star of this team behind that offensive line, which was much better than the one that he left in Tampa Bay, which was good. Then they added Tristan Wirfs, obviously, when Tom Brady got there, and it was taken to a whole nother level. Now, I'm not trying to make excuses here for Jameis Winston and his 30 interceptions, but Bill, when we think back to the 2019 season, I believe that Jameis Winston was a top five scorer in fantasy points per game, which is great. Now, certainly Sean Payton is not going to have the same leash in terms of allowing him to turn the football over that much. But guess who was number two and number three in fantasy points per game at the wide receiver position? Chris Godwin and Mike Evans. And also, guess who was number one? Michael Thomas that year was number one in fantasy points per game. So when I look at that second tier of wide receivers, you know, it might range from now AJ Brown all the way down to Mike Evans or Julio Jones. Michael Thomas sitting there at wide receiver nine. If you ask me in that second tier, who could either ascend into tier number one or even finish potentially as the number one overall wide receiver this year, I'm still nominating Michael Thomas because he has done it before. And that target tree, like you're talking about, it's narrow, but it's not a Drew Brees like passing game anymore. We kind of want to see this football spread around. And so if it's not, it can't just be Michael Thomas. We don't even know about Adam Trautman, even though I'm buying him as a late round tight end. And so maybe Tre'Quan is also the one that emerges. But really, the core of my comment is we got to get Jameis Winston as a starter. We got to see this season.
Yes. I mean, but again, I just want to be open. If you are a Taysom Hill supporter, you can pick him in the 19th or 20th round in leagues. And hey, if he's the starter, man, you are set. Like, you have a top 10 quarterback when you assume his rushing floor is going to be, and you can spend less money on quarterback elsewhere. So you have the opportunity to approach us however you do. But yes, I am hoping that Jameis Winston is the starter, of course. Should we flip it?
Can I do one more real quick,
please,
since I'm just such a positive person?
Please.
Robbie Anderson is going as wide receiver 32, even though last year he finished as wide receiver 26 in fantasy points per game. And I know that that can be a bit of a trap to fall into, saying, oh, he finished this high last year, and why is he being drafted after in that ADP this year? Because we know injuries happen, and that's why players get moved up. But again, when you look at the structure of the team, the narrative of the team, DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson are going to get theirs this year. And I actually think last season might have been their floor for production when you consider that Curtis Samuel was on the roster. I mean, I think nationally we've kind of overlooked that Joe Brady with Teddy Bridgewater and PJ Walker as his quarterbacks created an offense that had four 1,000 scrimmage yard players on it. And Mike Davis, Curtis Samuel, DJ Moore, and Robbie Anderson. I mean, that's an incredible feat. And what Joe Brady did last year with Robbie Anderson was like totally changed the public's generalization and view of him. I mean, he had a career average ADOT, average depth of target, of 16 yards. Mm-hmm. That dropped all the way down to 9.8 yards, which directly led him to 502 yards after contact last season. Now, also big picture, the Panthers were awful in like game-winning scenarios last year. They were awful in the red zone. Mm-hmm. And DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson only combined for 7 receiving touchdowns last year. I'm not necessarily saying he can get 7 by himself, but I am saying it's not like his opportunity is going to drop this year. And using him the inside, using him the outside, using him on shorter and intermediate, and obviously that downfield routes that maybe Sam Darnold can open up a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Robbie Anderson at wide receiver 32, I am exiting every single draft with him right now.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that is such a reliable stack to build. You know, if you want to get that core of that Panthers team, you could take Christian McCaffrey and go after the passing weapons, given how much he's included in the passing game. Or you could get that DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, Sam Darnold stack. And again, if that goes off, you're going to be feeling great because Sam Darnold is going pretty late. And you can obviously get Robbie Anderson, it seems like, at a very decent price. I think DJ Moore, honestly, still has a good amount of upside. I know that he last year was kind of disappointing, I suppose, in some ways. Like, you know, he catches were down, only 4 touchdowns again for the second consecutive year. But I mean, a guy who was averaging 18 yards per catch, like, you know, with both DJ Moore and with Robbie Anderson, we've seen them play different roles. We've seen them have different ADOTs and have different, you know, have different uses, but we know they're capable of either. We know that basically those guys can be anything from week to week. And I think that's really exciting. So,
and I'll throw out Terrace Marshall too. I find myself in these dangerous scenarios. I've been talking up the Jets offense on other shows, Bill, and now I'm talking up the Panthers offense attached to Sam Darnold. Maybe that's a mistake, but Terrace Marshall at wide receiver 67 right now. I mean, he has a history with Joe Brady. In fact, back in 2019, as just a sophomore in college in an offense that had Jamar Chase, that had Justin Jefferson, Terrace Marshall still scored 13 touchdowns. I just talked about the difficulty the Panthers had in the red zone. And Joe Brady cares more about his number 3 wide receiver than he does about his number 1 tight end when it comes to the passing game. And so, you know, they weren't able to have a 1-for-1 replacement for Curtis Samuel. I'm not saying Terrace Marshall is, but the only receiver that they brought in free agency was David Moore. And you couldn't get more opposite. So I wouldn't be surprised at all when Terrace Marshall, during his final year at LSU, played the majority of snaps in the slot. I bet they rotate all 3 there, but he just offers something different. I mean, he has that 6'2", 205 plus frame who can win in contested catches, was the best in college football in that area, is an athletic, developing, younger prospect. And if he stays healthy and wins that job, Terrace Marshall will crush that 67 wide receiver ADP right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much opportunity for that offense. And again, if you're someone who believes in Sam Darnold, here's your chance. Like, we know he's going to have the weapons. The line is okay, I guess. You know, I'm still concerned about the tackle, about left tackle a little bit. But, you know, I mean, there's definitely upside there by all means. And, you know, if you think Sam Darnold's going to be a top 15 quarterback, and you can invest in that appropriately. All right, we'll hit a couple negatives as we finish up here. I don't want to be too mean. And again, like last year, I thought Stephon Diggs would have been a guy who I would not have been investing in. And so I would take these with a grain of salt, to be fair, at least from my side. But Josh, is there a player who you're trying to avoid at his current ADP?
Oh, outright avoiding, not just trying, absolutely doing it. And maybe you can talk me succeeding into him. Yes, succeeding greatly. What I'm best at right now. And if you think I'm wrong, tell me.
I will.
And this might be too simplified, but Bill, I just don't want to invest in the worst team in the NFL. I don't want to invest in the worst offense in the NFL. And I know that even as this team's number one wide receiver, Brandon Cooks going as wide receiver 41, when he still has a boatload of 1,000 yard seasons during his career, that might be blasphemous to say I'm avoiding him. But again, I just think that the Texans are going to be absolutely miserable to watch. I mean, the Jets last year scored 15 points per game mm-hmm. on offense. I think the Texans are even worse. I would put them maybe around 12 to 13 points per game on average this year. When you look back to that Jets team, yes, Jamison Crowder was absolutely usable in best ball and in fantasy formats. I mean, he averaged about 13.5 points per contest. But the two styles, at least to me, and where I expect them to be used as, are drastically different. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jamison Crowder had a 7.5 average depth of target, 5.6 yards after catch. Brandon Cooks is about 12 yards in terms mm-hmm. of average depth of target, just over 4 yards per catch. So he's not like one of those accumulators who takes underneath catches and is able to create something afterwards. He kind of needs a downfield opportunities to hit. Mm-hmm. And again, I just go back to it. I just would rather go with, I'm not saying good teams. I'm investing in some patchy. I talked about the Bengals earlier, right? I think that's still going to be a good offense, despite them being almost certainly fourth in the AFC North mm-hmm. this year. I just think overall the Texans are going to be bad. And while some might say, well, their defense is going to be miserable, so the offense is going to have to put up points. Well, they're going to lose games because they can't put up points offensively, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's how teams are bad. It's not just, you know, chasing and garbage time. I don't really buy into that as much as other people. So I'm basically just flat out avoiding all Texans.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one thing if you're the Bucs, right? If you're the Jameis Winston era Bucs, where you know that offense is effective. Like, their offense is good. They might just turn the ball over a ton. And so, you know, if you have a good offense and you're getting those extra possessions late in games where you are throwing the ball a ton, like, you might throw some picks, of course, but you're going to have opportunities to score. I don't think this Texans offense is going to be good, which is why I'm extremely frustrated that you named one of the players who were on my list for players I was avoiding. The only wide receiver, in fact, on the list was Brandon Cooks, and I absolutely agree. I mean, I have been a big Tyrod Taylor fan in the past, and maybe he figures it out in Houston. But I mean, the last 3 years in Cleveland and with the Chargers just has not been good. He has not been an NFL caliber quarterback when you've seen him play, completing over just a little over 51% of his passes, a passer rating of 70.7, getting sacked 11% of the time. I mean, I don't think there's even been much in terms of rushing. I mean, he did have one rushing touchdown in his couple starts with the Browns, but 139 rushing yards and a score over 4 starts, not nothing. But not as if he is, you know, offering a super high floor for you. And so as a passer, I mean, I'm not thrilled. I mean, the Texans did use their first pick in this year's draft, a third rounder, on Davis Mills. So
which just has like the Jimmy Clausen situation written all over it. Of course it does. Doesn't it? Like, perfect. You draft a guy in round two who will probably get some starts during his rookie season. I mean, I know they drafted him around three, but it's along the same story that then he's most likely bad, and then you just replace him the next year and forget about him immediately. But maybe that's just negative Norris coming out here.
I mean, but that's certainly within the realm of possibility. I mean, with Tyrod Taylor, you know, he has to play well and he has to be good enough to keep Davis Mills off the football field. And again, maybe there's people drafting Brandon Cooks, assuming Deshaun Watson's coming back. And I think that's a reasonable, if you believe that, then yes, you want Brandon Cooks, because that's going to be a really valuable player, but I don't think that's very likely. And so I'm absolutely avoiding him. I think I've drafted him once in one my league so far. That might be one too many. That's totally fair. But no, I mean, that's reasonable. I absolutely think that you're seeing people draft him off of his stat line from a year ago and not accounting for the fact that this could be, like you said, the worst offense in football. Yep. And honestly, not even close. Like, yep. it could really be a significantly, significantly bad offense.
Because if you were going to put a second one, it might be the Lions. And I actually had DeAndre Swift on here, but I don't know how much I want to just dive into him specifically. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I've questioned, and it's gotten me in trouble some week to week's time, but overall, like, big picture look, being out on Jared Goff might be okay. Mm-hmm. And based on, you know, his own team basically showing us that they wanted to upgrade on him this offseason.
Yes.
But at least with the Lions, you know that you have a capable running back. And mm-hmm. most importantly, Bill, you have an offense that on paper could be, you know, top 10 in the NFL, right? And so an offensive line, creating that structure, creating and allowing Jared to succeed on script, that might give them more leverage to be slightly better than the Texans. Does that make sense?
It does. I don't think the Lions are as desperate to lose as the Texans should be.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like the Texans, the ideal scenario for them this year is they get the first overall pick. They get to trade Deshaun Watson. They get to start over. And for the Lions, you know, maybe the ideal situation is to get the first overall pick for the Lions and they don't realize it, but I do believe that they want to win and they're closer to winning, I think, than the Texans are, given what the Texans have assembled, especially on the offensive side of the football. You mentioned DeAndre Swift. I was going to bring him up as well. That almost seems too obvious.
I agree.
Like, I think, you know, every week we're seeing quotes from Lions camp about how Jamal Williams is going to be a, you know, features as a meaningful back. They bring in Todd Gurley. Like we're one step away from, like, you know, Priest Holmes showing up in camp and them just being like, Priest is a solid back, history of success. We got to get him in the lineup. So I think DeAndre Swift's ADP is going to fall. It's already fallen, I think, and it's going to continue to fall in the weeks to come. I want to give you a juicier one that you might disagree with when it comes to the negative here.
I hope I do.
I'm going to say Derrick Henry.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. I'm going to say Derrick Henry, who is, I believe, the running back 3.
Yep.
If I'm not mistaken. I mean, let's start with the basics here. Derrick Henry is an awesome running back. He is super talented. Nobody is suggesting Derrick Henry, when he's on the football field and 100%, is not a devastating player. And we have 2 years of evidence now saying that if you're going to be skeptical of Derrick Henry, you're going to regret it. I mean, he has been super productive. He has been a DFS week-to-week winner. He has been a fantasy league winner. He has been awesome. Derrick Henry carried the ball 378 times last year. I mean,
that's a lot.
It's a lot. It's like, you know, it is a staggering workload for Derrick Henry. And yes, I know he is a big, strong man and he can take that workload. But like time after time, we've seen people say, hey, X player can take it. X player can take the workload. Arian Foster can take the workload. Christian McCaffrey can take the workload. These guys break down. It's just too tough of a position to count on a guy being this significant when it comes to carry totals on a week after week basis. As a receiver, I think it's fair to say he is limited. I mean, he has one long screen for a touchdown over the past couple of years that kind of goosed up his yards per reception last year. But I mean, he is basically a dump off guy and maybe the occasional screen. Like, he's not going to be a significant part of the receiving game.
I mean, he set career records last year, Bill, with 19 catches.
That's true. He did top 18 from the year before. I don't know. I wasn't watching, Josh. Did they stop the game to celebrate the 19th catch the 19th there? Catch.
It's like the Emmitt Smith moment when everyone was the one of the Drew Brees, the Peyton Manning moments. I guess my only question here with Derrick Henry is how many backs you're taking over him. Because I know you're still taking him. Like, let's say if he's running back, I don't know, 7. And still on the board. But so are you taking, I'm assuming, Alvin Kamara over
him? Yes.
Are you taking Saquon Barkley, who's going as running back 4 right now, over him?
I mean, there's no history of injuries with Saquon Barkley. I'm sure he'll be fine. I think I would take Saquon Barkley as well.
Okay. Ezekiel Elliott is up there. Nick Chubb. I mean, I'm just kind of going down this list. Cam Akers. Any of those names over Derrick? Because I know you love him and I know we love the situation. I know the opportunity is there. It's odd. I kind of feel like the receiving work and lack of, I should say, is baked in, another cliche in our best ball streets. Because I mean, this is a team that like would throw Jeremy McNichols out there in certain situations to like get him receiving work instead of Derrick Henry. And I don't know that. I was out on the Titans before they made the Julio Jones trade because it felt like, oh, we need to bring the band back together for the third year. And it just felt like everyone was not worse, but they weren't as deep. And I think the Arthur Smith loss is something we absolutely need to talk about because, you know, the Titans for years feels like have been one of the best teams inside the 20-yard line in the red zone in terms of touchdown percentage? And do we, I know they hired from within, so they want to do exactly the same stuff, it feels like. I'm sure it's not going to be that easy, but he's being drafted like it is going to be that easy, right? So I'm with you there, but the receiving work, you know, I'm not saying he's ever going to catch 30 passes, but I also would like him. I mean, he would then also have to again cross that 300 carry mark this year to hit his ADP probably too.
Think about how many times they have to stop the game if you have 30 catches. That'd be just a constant stream of just game postponement.
Week 14, week 15, week 16.
You would just have to have everything on the ready seemingly week after week. And I think the other thing that comes to mind to me when it comes to the Julio Jones trade is something Mina Kimes brought up when I was talking with the trade on her podcast. I was talking with her about it on her podcast, and that, you know, Julio Jones, yes, he is a replacement for Corey Davis. He is a replacement for Jonnu Smith to some extent, but you have to wonder whether Julio Jones is a sort of hedge on Derrick Henry's workload, where they might become a more pass happy team. Of course, I don't think they're going to turn into the Chiefs or anything. I'm not saying that, but I think, you know, when you trade for Julio Jones, I think one of the reasons you do it is thinking, okay, you know, we're going to throw the ball a little more, not a ton more, but at least, you know, on first and 10, we're not going to be maybe the second most run heavy team in the league in neutral situations. And, you know, I think as you project what Derrick Henry's workload is going to be like, I think even if he's healthy for 17 games, I was going to say 16, 17 games this year, like, I think you're projecting him for somewhere in the 300 to 325 range as opposed to 378. And that might be fine. I think he can deliver a running back three return from there.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, that's sort of the most likely scenario. Sorry, that's the, you know, probably the 90th percentile outcome to me for his season, assuming he stays healthy. And I think just, you know, you go through the track record of guys with this sort of workload over the past 20 years, you know, you're basically betting on Derrick Henry being a dramatic exception to the rule. Right. And maybe he is, but so, that's the sort of decision you have to make.
So what you're basically saying is you take Mike Davis over Derrick Henry right now.
Mike Davis is a proven three down back with a
freaking track love Mike Davis success. As running back 22, I freaking love it. Okay, I'll close this out with one more negative just quick.
Please.
And it hurts me to do this because every year this guy gets doubted. Oh, he's going to get injured. Oh, how dare you? He's not going to play a full season. Mm-hmm. When I drafted Will Fuller last year, I laughed at those people because he was awesome. But this is not the same situation Will Fuller is walking into this year. I mean, with the Texans in 2020, he had an ADOT of 13.3 yards, which was a career low, I might add, Bill. Now, how many Dolphins wide receivers do you think had an ADOT above 12 yards last year, Bill?
I would guess zero.
It was only one, and his name is Preston Williams.
Yes.
So what I'm getting at here is where Will Fuller wins is not where he's going to rack up opportunities on the Dolphins unless Tua just takes a gigantic leap forward and changes into something that we didn't see. I'm not out on Tua by any means. I just think when you look at where Will Fuller is being drafted at wide receiver 37, that's ahead of the likes of Curtis Samuel, who I've already waxed poetic about. Mm-hmm. And it's also eight spots ahead of Jaylen Waddle, who's going as wide receiver 45. And if you ask me right now, who's going to have more catches and more yards in this offense, Jaylen Waddle's skill set to me fits Will Fuller. I think the Dolphins had a bunch of money that they could spend this offseason. They wanted to surround Tua with playmakers because they wanted to see what they had. And so Will Fuller might play more of a role, like be more real life important than he is fantasy football important. And it pains me to say because I loved him last year, but at wide receiver 37, I'm just not getting a lot of shares.
Yeah, I mean, I love Will Fuller.
Me too, man.
This is the tough part. This is the wrong day to say this because the internet is abuzz with Tua throwing like four interceptions in practice or whatever. But I kind of think Tua is going to be a lot better this year. I am a Tua believer. Yeah. And I think, again, that's the decision you have to make. If you think Tua is going to be a totally different player, then I think Will Fuller makes sense at his current ADP. If you think Tua is going to be a little better, then he doesn't make sense. And I think the points you bring up are totally fair. And I think even if he's going, even if Will Fuller is going to be a deep threat, there's competition for that role. Preston Williams is coming back. I mean, Devontae Parker is not Will Fuller, but he is a guy who we will throw up 50-50 balls to here and there. I mean, Jalen Waddle could be a guy who makes plays downfield as well. I mean, there's all it would shock me if Will Fuller got the sort of receiving workload and target share that he got in Houston a year ago. And I also don't want to be like the PEDs guy, but like Will Fuller also has one healthy season in his career, and it's a season that ended with him getting suspended for PED usage. Like, you know, I there's a lot of reasons. There's a lot of ways to see Will Fuller not delivering on expectations. And as someone who really likes Will Fuller, really thinks he is a top 15 receiver in the NFL when he's healthy and on the field, I don't want to say that, but I think that's a fair criticism to bring up.
This is why we don't dislike players. We just dislike where they are drafted. That's it.
Just dislike ADPs.
Yes.
That's all that matters. All right, Josh, I want, we could go through this all day in terms of players we like or dislike, but you have your own podcast where people can hear you pontificating about this very topic.
I do. I do. I didn't get to talk about Rashad Bateman, by the way. Go draft him as well. The Underdog Football Show. Everyone check it out. It's on every podcast platform out there. We also are on the YouTube channel, Underdog Fantasy. Bill, this was an absolute blast. I'm so glad that you're into basketball because I'm into it as well. It allows us to keep this conversation going all the way from June all the way until week one. And the world is a better place because of it.
there's no weeks off, sadly, anymore. Like the Julio week was the one week where I was like, okay, I'm going to go turn off my phone. And it lasted like 3 hours. It was terrible. Josh, thank you so much for coming on.
Absolutely, Bill. Anytime. Thanks, buddy.
All right. Thanks so much again to Josh Norris. Check out the Underdog Football Show. Definitely a podcast where you learn a lot about baseball, but also about fantasy football and how people are perceiving the league as we get closer to the NFL season. Hope you guys enjoyed this one. We'll try and hit some more football topics, of course, in the weeks to come. Not a lot happening right now. I'm focusing mostly on Euros, but I hope you guys are enjoying that on ESPN Plus, or sorry, on ESPN, I think on ESPN Plus as well. You can stream it, but thanks so much for listening. More football audio on the way.